Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined today by George Goncalves, MUFG's head of U.S. macro strategy. It's Tuesday, October 4th, 2022. Welcome back to the podcast, George.
Great to be on, as always.
Yeah, and always good to have you. And it seems like always plenty of things to talk about. So, kind of along those lines, you know, and as discussed often between yourself and I on this podcast, 2022 continues to be a year that just doesn't cease to amaze. The last time you were on, you gave us your preview of the September FOMC meeting. As I recall, you were expecting a hawkish outcome, and that's exactly how it played out. At the time, you were pretty bearish on pretty much every asset class, you know, across stocks to bonds, which really made a lot of sense to me. And that seemed to be the right view, but then last week happened, or I should say late last week happened. Can you help me and our listeners understand recent price action?
Absolutely. And I do think, you know, we got to take a step back and try to put in perspective, you know, the sort of moves that we've had in September were, you know, multi-standard deviation moves, especially in the rates market and FX. And that kind of reverberated through into the risk markets. And in many ways, this, you know, again, translates into what the Fed has been claiming they've wanted all along, which is financial conditions tightening. And so we had that in spades in the month of September, especially towards the end of the month into the end of the quarter. You know, price action got really, really slippery. You know, initially the weeks or so, you know, leading into it, a lot of the volatility was actually coming from overseas, both from, you know, FX intervention news, between what was going on in the UK sovereign markets and their currency. You know, even though some of those things have kind of resolved, at least in a, you know, for the time being, they seem resolved. You know, we can debate if they are. I'm still, you know, skeptical of the fact that, you know, there's still some issues out there. But nonetheless, you know, we went through that. But, you know, the last week of September ended with a, you know, pretty big cathartic move in risk assets. You know, even to a point where IG spreads had a pretty big move towards the end of the month. You know, for the better part of the summer, even though we had, you know, both a high in stock market and then, you know, a tighter level of spreads on the back of that, you know, IG spreads never really widened a lot, even though stocks were heading lower for pretty much the whole month of September. But they played up a very big catch up towards the end of the quarter. You know, we were pretty, you know, negative on spreads and still remain the case, but, you know, we got to, you know, close to some of our targets, close to, you know, over 160 on the cash index since it's come back a little bit. And you had that, you had stocks down for the month, I think 9% or so. Yeah, 9.3. It was actually the worst month. September was the worst month for the S&P, even though we've been in a bear market all, you know, all throughout 2022 in one shape or another. So pretty, you know, ended the quarter on a really kind of negative outlook, you know, bearish sentiment. And then the last 2 days of trading is where we are now with a pretty big reversal from the lows for risk assets. Now, for me, we could talk about more about that, you know, as we go through our other views for what lies ahead. I'm, again, you know, skeptical of the staying power of such moves like this. Whenever you get, basically, we're unwinding half of the month's losses in the first two trading days of October. That to me seems more like positioning and, you know, a short squeeze, as they call it. Nothing more than that, I think. And we'll see if there's any sort of legs behind this move and if it trends higher. But I do think that, you know, this is just a, you know, oversold market conditions, very bearish outlook led to, you know, stocks bouncing back. And on top of that, and I'll stop here, is the idea that, you know, rates now are starting to try to, again, for the second time or third time, I'm losing count, trying to like time when the Fed's going to pivot. And, you know, everyone's so dependent on the Fed no longer hiking. Meanwhile, they have given us really no indication they're going to stop, and inflation is not resolved yet. So it feels very much like wishful thinking. You know, markets got oversold. Rates have rallied a lot. I think that's also now gotten too far too fast. And here we are.
Okay, you know, so I think that context really helps. I mean, as you're kind of talking, I'm looking at some graphs here, and rates are still at year to date highs. You know, stocks are still pretty darn close to year to date lows. Credits, you know, at or you know ish, you know, year to date wide. So you know, so as you said, you know, maybe or you know, said another way, kind of bear market rallies, if you will. So let's continue on this. Last week, you released your flagship U.S. Macro to Markets Monthly, which you upliftingly entitled "A Sea of Doom Loops as Financial Conditions Tighten Further." Let's go into these doom loops you outlined. I suppose the obvious question is, do they play out further, or do these hopes for a Fed pivot that you just mentioned have them, you know, sort of done and dusted?
So there's, you know, many doom loops out there, and we're not going to go through all of them. We don't have time on the podcast, but they all kind of relate to each other, and many of them do have a common thread, which is some sort of reaction to central bank policy or fiscal policy, or just where we are in the business cycle, and how healthy the overall financial condition, financial system is, and then that translates into, you know, tighter or easier financial conditions, and it's complex, right? I mean, we operate in a very complex market with various different needs and wants, regulatory issues, so it's, you know, we can't just, like, you know, have a one kind of statement explaining all these various doom loops, but the ones that really kind of jump out are around, like, what's going on in the FX market. You know, the dollar has been a dominant force, both in terms of what it's done from a relative value versus other currencies, but also, you know, the dollar still is the main medium of exchange globally, and at times there's shortages of dollars, or, you know, the need for the dollars rise as other currencies get weaker, and, you know, U.S. rates get higher and more expensive for these companies and countries to pay back their debt. So, you know, we clearly have this, you know, the big one is like the FX doom loop, which, you know, goes into the idea, if, you know, countries try to defend their currencies, they've built up these cash hoards of dollar reserves, and if they have to sell them in a way, then that pushes up rates. If, you know, if there's not enough buyers of treasuries at that given moment, and you kind of get into this kind of, you know, cycle where you can have there the dollar perversely continuing to strengthen as, you know, as people try to defend their currencies. You know, then they, you know, have like the whole notion around, like, can the Fed step in and try to help, and does the Fed really want to at this point? You know, do they want to encumber their balance sheet and grow and provide dollar swap lines? Is it even necessary? Is there really a crisis? And then there's so many other ones that, you know, you kind of go down the rabbit hole of doom loops. You know, again, back to the common thread around the Fed and this idea that, you know, if the Fed were only to pivot, they would solve all of our problems. And I think that's also too simplistic. I think, one, we don't know how much of these, you know, really fast and furious hikes that we've had all throughout this year, how much, you know, they've impacted, you know, the broader economy. These things operate with a huge lag, and it's the cumulative effect that ultimately is what matters. So if, you know, we don't know when they're going to stop, number one, and they've done a lot already, and they're, you know, they're committed to go even further, and plus they have the quantitative tightening happening in tandem, you know, this double tightening, this kind of multiple loops all kind of operating at the same time, you know, something can break out there, and so far it hasn't, from what we can tell. I mean, other than, you know, these kind of bigger vol shocks that happen in FX and rates, but nothing really systemic per se. So, you know, we don't know. So I feel like, you know, this idea that somehow the Fed's going to solve it just by stopping makes no sense. They still have their mandate on inflation. And if they don't get that right, it might lead to other potential unintended consequences and other doom loops that we're not thinking about, right? So I feel like it's too wishful. Again, it's another, you know, another sign of wishful thinking that just if the Fed stopped, everything would get better.
Yeah, I mean, clearly inflation is like through the roof. You know, that's an obvious one that doesn't work out, you know, well, if the Fed pivots, and the other negative externalities you point out, you know, like as you said, who knows? And you know, probably the greatest microcosm of the doom loop is what's happening in the UK with you know, gilts, you know, selling off like crazy, creating this vicious cycle for LDI accounts, you know, forcing the BOE to step in. So, you know, really good stuff. And as you said, far too much to go over in, you know, in just one podcast episode. But you had some, I do want to go back to the piece. You had some other great points, you know, specifically around inflation. You know, among other things, you articulated that you have seen enough evidence at this point to suggest that the 30-year plus bull market rally in the bond market is over, you know, which is a big statement. You shared an update on financial condition tightening, and that's really been a guiding theme throughout the year for your strategy calls. You have clearly plenty to talk through here. Take our listener through a couple of the key points.
Yeah, let's finish here. I mean, so the piece that, you know, the way we designed the piece, it's really more like a chart book with, you know, bullet points and trying to really, you know, use charts to say 1,000 words, but I'll try to be brief here. I mean, the inflation insights that we usually cover, especially being a main topic for the year, you know, the one thing that's, you know, that we noted in the piece is, you know, something that's been happening is the, although we still have spot and currently high inflation backdrop, inflation expectations have been turning the corner, both from surveys from the consumer side, as well as market-based inflation. You know, 5-year spot, you know, inflation has converged towards five-year forward. I mean, we've seen a massive drop, you know, which, you know, basically 10-year tips break even, major collapse there. And if you look at the charts, really the majority of the rise in rates that we saw during the month of September was largely real rates, because break evens actually collapsed during the month. And so, yeah, we had a pretty big adjustment on expectations for inflation. Now, the markets could be wrong, you know, but the markets and the surveys at the same time pointing in the same direction, you know, have proven to be, you know, decent kind of forward indicators at saying, hey, you know, perhaps, you know, with the Fed being credible and, you know, really aggressive on tightening, they're going to get inflation under control. And this is why, again, it's, you know, going back to the second point from before, it's a slippery slope once you start to kind of, you know, if you don't finish the job, you never know when you really truly finish the job of fighting inflation. It usually tends to end with them overshooting, but if you stop short, then you end up with the problem of inflation persisting, and then survey measures go the other way because then people think the Fed is not credible. Then you lose that credibility, and it's hard to gain it back. So I think that, you know, the markets and the consumer are, I think, looking at the future and saying, hey, as long as we get inflation under control, then we're gonna have, you know, more of that standard economic cycle that we're used to. But if the Fed were to blink too early and come under pressure from what's going on in markets or elsewhere, that I think would be, you know, a huge disservice. And I don't think they'll do it, but we'll see. I mean, on the rate side, the story and the point I'm making, I think you're right. It's a very bold statement to say that the bond bull cycle has been over. I've been doing this for 20 plus years, 25 years going, basically the whole bull run through. And I've been notoriously more of a bull than a bear when it comes to fixed income. But what I mean by it, and I think this is where people sometimes get confused, they think like, well, if a bull cycle is over, that means a bear cycle has to start. And so for me, like, our kind of criteria was, you know, we surpassed the prior peak's high for both short rates, but also the 10-year got above 3.25, which is something we really rarely have done with every other Fed cycle. So that was something new since the last, you know, 20, 30 years. So that to me was a kind of a big flag there. We've broken the big 40-year trend cycle with like a 3-standard deviation move on the monthly charts. And that's kind of persisted for 2 quarters in a row. And to kind of borrow, even though the NBR does not use the two quarters in a row criteria for recessions, like I kind of use that for, you know, just kind of if trend changes. When you have 2 quarters in a row of some sort of trend changing, that's a pretty big deal. So I think the fact that we broke that big channel on a persistent basis for 2 quarters at an even higher level of rates means that the cycle is probably over in terms of like always having new lower lows. You know, let's be honest, we got to 0.33, I think, on the 10-year at some point intraday during the COVID shock. So could we ever go there again? Sure, but I don't think so. And I think more likely what this ends up happening is, you know, as long as the Fed is really not ever going to go back to super, super low rates and QE, if we're going to try to avoid those things, not to kind of re-trigger inflation in the future, then more likely then, you know, we're going to trade sideways, or rates are going to kind of start to create a band and go sideways, very similar to what, you know, what happened during when the JGB stopped rallying before QE started in Japan in the early 2000s. I mean, I think that late 90s period will be a good example of what may happen to US rates going forward. And the last part on financial conditions, we kind of, you know, weaved it into this whole conversation. I still think we're not there yet in terms of seeing the ultimate tightening of financial conditions. I think the Fed probably has to lean harder. It hasn't gotten the full impact on aggregate demand enough to slow down the economy for, you know, to take up pricing pressures. I think they're going to keep going to, you know, try to get towards 4%, maybe higher than that, and keep the QT in place. And that, you know, valuations will come out of risk assets over time, and we'll see, you know, Q3 earnings are that great. You know, the illiquidity of year end and maybe one final sell off in risk assets, Q4, Q1, I don't know, but I think, you know, we need to create a bottoming process. And then from that point forward, you know, I think, you know, the consumer will get a little more defensive and the Fed can claim victory, and maybe you can, you know, see them pause at some point. But to kind of do it now, I think it's a little bit too soon. That's it for me, John.
You sound somewhat apologetic, and you really don't need to, because there's a ton there. So for more, I would definitely encourage our listeners again to check out George's most recent Macro to Markets Monthly, again called A Sea of Doom Loops as FCI Tightens Further. And again, if you are not receiving George's strategy reports, please feel free to get in contact with him. Great stuff as always. Thanks again, George.
Thanks, John.
And thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.